restrictions on underage hazardous drinking and failure to graduate from high school. It's results from the National Longitudinal Survey of Adolescent Health, AdHealth. I'm Dan Falk, and my co-authors are Dr. Ralph Hinkston and Dr. Mariella Shirley. They're with us from NIAAA. So, as we all know, underage drinking is a national problem. I'll just provide a couple statistics just to support that. There are high rates of drinking among American youth. About 11 million, or 29% of youth between ages of 12 and 20 reported alcohol use in the past month, and about 7 million, or 20%, reported binge drinking in the past month. Binge drinking, for those of you who don't know it, you can define it many ways, but drinking five drinks on the same occasion is generally one common way. The health and safety consequences of underage drinking are well known: injury and death, risky sexual behaviors, other drug use, learning and memory disruption, functional neurological deficits. And for everyone that went to the Surgeon General's call to action to prevent and reduce underage drinking, he highlighted the importance of underage drinking as a national problem. Dropping out of high school is also a national problem. There are high rates among American youths. About 5% of 10th to 12th graders drop out each year, and about 15% of adolescents will drop out overall. So dropping out is a bad thing. It's associated with poor labor and social outcomes, including decreased income and occupational status, living in poverty and receiving public assistance, unemployment, and high crime. The question is there a relationship between drinking and dropping out? Well, the cross-sectional studies out there say yes. They're pretty clear about that. The methodology they typically employ is to examine rates of substance use and other covariates in adolescent dropouts, and then compare that to those adolescents that are still in school. So, for example, Fagan and Pabon found that after controlling for a number of covariates, alcohol use was higher among inner-city youths who dropped out versus those who did not drop out. In parentheses, these results are limited to a community sample. Now, one of the disadvantages of these cross-sectional studies is that it's difficult to determine if the drinking caused the dropping out or vice versa, because you often don't know which came first, or it's unclear which came first. So the advantages of longitudinal studies is that it permits researchers to examine the causal pathways, since the relative timing of alcohol use and dropping out is clear. The methodology they commonly employ is to examine alcohol use while the adolescents are in school at time one, and then later follow them and see whether they subsequently dropped out at time two. There's a limited number of longitudinal alcohol studies out there. A recent review of articles from 1990 to 2006 found that there's only 8 of 24 longitudinal substance use studies that examine alcohol per se. The other ones examined either marijuana or cigarette smoking exclusively, or else they aggregated measures of substance use, that is, they mixed in alcohol with other drugs. So you're not able to determine the specific contribution of alcohol to dropping out. The findings from these longitudinal alcohol studies are basically equivocal. For example, Wistrom found that the frequency of alcohol intoxication did significantly predict dropping out, and that was in a nationally representative sample of Norwegian adolescents. But Ellickson, however, did not find any significant relationship, and that was between the frequency of alcohol consumption and dropping out in U.S. sample of 7th graders. Now, there might be some methodological variations that account for these equivocal results, such as varying measures of alcohol use. Some studies use any alcohol use, whereas others look at drinking patterns, like intoxications per month. And then studies might employ different thresholds for the various measures. We know that some alcohol use is quite normative in the adolescent population, but higher thresholds of use are more likely to be associated with dropping out. And then there's limited numbers and types of covariate controls employed in the literature out there. Some studies don't use any controls, and others use quite a few. And as we all know, significant results may become non-significant after you control for key antecedents and potential mediators. A couple other limitations out there in the literature: some use community samples, so the results are not generalizable to the national population. And then a lot of them use older data sets from the 80s. So the goals of the present study, then, we want to extend the current literature, and we want to explore whether the hazardous drinking is associated with subsequent dropping out of high school. And we're going to use a data set that's recent, it's nationally representative, it's longitudinal, it's comprehensive so that we can include many important covariates, N is large so that we have sufficient statistical power to put these covariates in a single model. The data is AdHealth. It's the largest, most comprehensive survey of adolescents ever undertaken. It was initiated in 1994 under a grant from the NICHD as co-funding from 17 other federal agencies. It employs a longitudinal design using nationally representative data, and finally, it collects information on a wide range of adolescent behaviors and risk factors from adolescents into young adulthood. The sampling frame, they started with 80 high schools that were representative of all U.S. high schools with respect to region, urbanicity, size, type, and ethnicity. And then these participating high schools identified 52 feeder junior high schools, and that's how they got the younger kids into the sample. So there's a total of 132 schools in the study. Now in AdHealth, there were four surveys in AdHealth. One was an initial school survey in 1994 and 1995, and then there were three home surveys, wave one in 95, wave two in 96, and wave three about 6 to 7 years after the first wave in 95. So we used, for this study, respondents who participated in waves one and three. Wave one started with about 6,300 adolescents in grades 7 through 12, and in wave one, sociodemographic variables and risk factors for dropping out were assessed. And then in wave three, about 4,800 or about 75% of the 6,400 were re-interviewed about 7 years later. And that's where we got our dropping out status variable. So information was collected to determine dropout status, and that information was the in-school status, were they still in school, or did they receive a diploma or a GED? And then we had some exclusions. We excluded those kids that were not in school at wave one, those that were still in school at wave three, and then those that were missing dropping out status data wave three. So those were small numbers. Our final study sample was 4,600 about. The measures, dropping out status was assessed in wave three. Graduated kids were those that received a high school diploma. The dropouts were those that did not receive a high school diploma, or those that received GED, so they dropped out and later received a GED. The sociodemographic variables were assessed in wave one. We see gender, grade, race, ethnicity, parents receiving public assistance, that's our proxy for income, because there's a lot of missing data for income, and then parent education. We also measured five other classes of risk and protector factor variables from wave one. And all of these variables that I'm going to describe have been theorized to be associated with dropping out and or have received empirical support in the literature. So these classes of variables are substance use variables, school-related variables, child-parent relationship, peer-related variables, and psychosocial variables. I'm just going to go through these briefly since there's a lot of measures. I'll just highlight the ones that may need a little more explaining. Binge drinking is our key outcome in this study. Measured frequency of five or more drinks per occasion in the past year. We also looked at drug use, days per month, and cigarette smoking days per month. We have a host of school-related variables, coursework grade average, truant, that is whether they had an unexcused absence in the past year, repeated a grade ever, suspended or expelled ever, school problems, that is, did they have trouble getting along with teachers, school connectedness, that is, did they feel close to people at school, and then a couple of expectation variables. Does the child expect to attend college? And do the parents expect the child to graduate from high school? The child-parent relationship measures, we have two. Parent bond, which is, how satisfied does the kid feel about his relationship with the parents? And then parental involvement, which is the sum of 11 activities that you could possibly do with a parent. So we have two peer-related variables. The best friend does not attend school, and the best friends drink alcohol. And then finally, here's our psychosocial variables. We're looking at depression, self-esteem, sensation seeking, which is basically looking for excitement and thrills, impulsive decision making, which is basically you don't research solutions to problems too carefully before you make before you act. And then delinquency, which is some of delinquent behaviors, but these are non-substance use behaviors. So in the analysis, a lot of these were continuous measures. All the continuous measures, except for parental involvement, were transformed into categorical variables. And this is basically just done to facilitate interpretation and to show any nonlinear relationships. We use the weighted prevalence of all the weighted prevalence of all variables was calculated. And bivariate crosstabs were run to determine the prevalence of dropping out by each predictor. Chi-squared tests were conducted to determine bivariate statistical significance. Significant variables were included in a single logistic regression model. Odds ratios were estimated for each predictor, net of other predictors in the model. And finally, all analyses, we used Sudan to analyze the data to account for the complex sampling design of ad health. Okay, so the results. 70% of the sample dropped out by wave 3. About 10% dropped out with no high school diploma, and about 7% dropped out and later received a GED. And then as far as binge drinking goes, you see about 26% of adolescents binge drink in the past year, and as much as 6.5% at least weekly. So that's pretty high. All the measures were significant bivariate predictors of dropping out and in the expected directions based on theory, except for parental bond and impulsive decision making. Those were not significant. The prevalence of dropping out among the substance use variables is as follows. I'll show you those some graphs here. So here we see that the prevalence of dropping out increases with the level of binge drinking. So you see that weekly binge drinkers were about 2.4 times more likely to drop out than non-binge drinkers. And you also see that these the lower levels of binge drink are pretty similar, but this highest level is quite a bit higher, at least weekly have more risk of dropping out. Prevalence of dropping out by cigarette smoking, you also see a somewhat linear increase, but the heavy smokers were about 2 times more likely to drop out than the non-smokers. These two lower levels were quite similar, and again, the highest level was higher. And I'm pointing this out because we're going to see this in the logistic regression models pan out similarly. This is drug use. The heavy drug users were about twice as likely to drop out as the non-drug users. All three levels of drug use were probably statistically similar, as you can see by the overlapping bars, the standard error bars, and they're all probably a little bit greater than the non-drug users. Finally, the logistic regression results. Variables from 4 of the 6 classes were significantly associated with dropping out, and these included the sociodemographic characteristics, school-related variables, parent-related variables, and substance use variables. The non-significant classes were the peer-related variables and the psychosocial variables. So I'm going to show you just the significant predictors of dropping out since we don't have a lot of time. The blue is the odds ratios are significantly different than 1. So what we see from among the sociodemographic class of variables, as grade increases, the likelihood of dropping out decreases. And that's really probably an exposure effect. Those 7th graders are exposed to dropping out for a longer period. Whether the parents receive public assistance, those were more likely to drop out, 1.6 times the risk. And as parent education increases, likelihood of dropping out decreases. So all these results were expected in expected directions. Among the school-related variables, obviously at coursework, grade average was related to dropping out. The higher the grades, the lower the risk of dropping out. It makes sense. Truancy, repeating a grade, and being suspended or expelled, those were more likely to drop out. The odds ratios range from 1.65 to 2.39. A couple more school-related variables. Whether the child expects to attend college was related to dropping out. So when the child expects to attend college more strongly, they are at lower risk of dropping out. The parent expects the child to graduate from high school. This was a little bit of an unusual finding. We found the medium level was at increased risk of dropping out. And the high risk was not. We're going to look into that a little more deeply. We would have expected the medium and high to actually have a decreased risk of dropping out compared to the low. The parent-related variable, the only one that was significant was parental involvement. So as you increase the number of activities, you decrease the likelihood of dropping out. And then finally, finally, the substance use variables. Smoking 15 days or more had 1.5 times the risk as not smoking. And then finally, the variable we're interested here is binge drinkers were about twice, at least weekly, were twice as likely to drop out as compared to none at all. And you see that the lower levels of binge drinking are basically identical to the non-binge drinkers. So in conclusion, weekly binge drinking among adolescents doubles their risk for subsequent failure to complete high school, even after taking into account a multitude of confounding factors. Dropout prevention efforts can be therefore tailored to target the specific risky characteristics and behaviors found in this study. Limitations in future directions. Well, this study found an association between binge drinking and subsequent dropping out. However, it did not reveal how binge drinking might cause dropping out to occur. So, dropping out is a complex phenomenon. Rosenthal probably said it best when they said there's a bewildering number and diversity of determinants for dropping out, and there's potentially a complex interplay between them. So several investigators have looked at mediators between substance use and dropping out, and these might have included in the longitudinal literature decreased motivation, social sanctions, and adoption of social roles. Actually, that should be inappropriate, adoption of social roles like marriage and pregnancy. Future studies should therefore investigate other potential mediators that might reveal the mechanisms underlying the significant relationships found in this study. And in fact, we're now just starting to look at, use wave two of the AdHealth data with this aim. Finally, I'd like to thank NIAAA for their support. This work was done under contract with them via the Alcohol Epidemiologic Data Systems mechanism. Thanks a lot.